The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning, it's Donna Marie Doherty here in for Greg Hughes this morning on Monday the 23rd of March. We have loads coming up, including a grant to give away, which I will tell you all about just after we get the papers done. Now, usually I do start with the national papers, but this morning I wanted to start with the dairy news, and that is, of course, in the very shocking news about the murder of Amy Doherty. Amy was a woman in her 20s. She was a mother of two, and there has been widespread shock across Derry and Donegal after it emerged that she was very sadly killed on Saturday. There's been a 30-year-old man now who's been arrested on suspicion of her murder, and Detective Inspector Michelle Griffin says that officers attended a property in the Summer Meadow Mews area of the city at around 20 past 10 and located an injured woman at the scene. She was taken to hospital by colleagues in the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, where she sadly died. Their thoughts are with her family and her loved ones. And the community that's trying to come to terms with this shocking loss. There was a safety alert, maybe the right word for it, on the Foyle Bridge, which is, and it says here in the paper that it's understood that this may have been linked with the murder as well. We have had many politicians, both in Donegal and in Derry, doling out their condolences to Amy's family and to her friends and family. And there's a quote here from Colm Eastwood, and says that there's no doubt that it will make women and girls across Derry and the North feel less safe. And, you know, I often be asked in my line of work, is there things that annoy me, or, you know, dealing with the news every day, is there things that would upset you? And, you know, usually it's grand, you know, it's a funny kind of thing where, because you're so in the thick of it, that you're able to detach from it. But whenever we're seeing all the stories, last 2 weeks ago, Ellie in Fermanagh, and there's another case of a woman who was very brutally attacked down in Limerick. Those ones I find quite hard, because I see these girls and, you know, they're around the same age as me. We will be talking about this later on in the programme, more in depth, but I just wanted to make sure that we give it the attention that it needed. So we'll go on now to the Irish Times. And we're going to look at the announcement that's pending tomorrow, and that is short-term reliefs on energy costs. Excuse me. Tomorrow we are due to hear from the Dáil Chamber what we're going to get to try and help us out with the cost of fuel, which everybody has been suffering. That's both businesses, farmers, fishermen, people at home, parents. There's no person, I'd say, that's not being impacted by this across the country. So the Irish Times reports that a tax rebate scheme for hauliers, a double fuel allowance payment and a reduction in excise duty to cut fuel prices at the pumps are all expected to be agreed by the government today. The measures will be announced tomorrow initially, are to only be in place for a few weeks. So it's the government as well have the job of trying to manage expectations. I have just had a chat there with Minister Dara Cleary, which we'll be listening to later in the programme. And he said in that, you know, the government can't protect every single person from this, or every single sector. And some would argue, well, that's your job. That's what you're meant to do. And so this war is going to impact every different little sector within the entire island of Ireland. They said that they did their best to try and to make sure everyone was included. So those decisions will go to a cabinet meeting tomorrow, and then we'll hear them in the Dáil. So on a Tuesday, the Dáil usually starts in around 2 o'clock. So my estimation is that if they're to be announced in the chamber, that's where they'll hear them. And if they're not to be announced in the chamber, it may just be before that. But I expect it'll be lunchtime or just after lunchtime that we'll hear that. So Simon Harris is expected to recommend colleagues a reduced in the excise to cut the price of fuel at the petrol pumps. Big benefit here for people in Donegal, because it's very hard to get anywhere unless you drive. And the double fuel allowances that will target those who are the most vulnerable to fuel poverty. Excuse me. So we'll have to see that sort of Derek Cleary's department. So we'll get a bit more clarity on that tomorrow. I know it's been a very long, I suppose 2 weeks since this all started, and we just would, you know, everyone just wants a little bit of a bit of breathing space. So Hopefully we'll get that tomorrow, but no doubt there definitely will be some sector there. Just whenever I had a look and they were talking about hauliers, it's good that they're being covered. In any of the speculation I've seen, I haven't seen an awful lot of talk about farmers or fishermen, so hopefully they'll be included in that excise cut because they'd be very, very important to hear. Looking now to the Irish Independent, evictions are to surge as sales by landlords make up half of the homes on the market. So we had new rent rules come in, and the Irish Times, or Irish Independent, excuse me, is saying now that they're expecting the cost of a semi-detached house to increase nationwide, because small landlords are now leaving the market. Some of the reasons for this is that they're saying that small landlords are an ageing population. Many aren't willing to commit to the fixed 6-year term because, you know, generally speaking, if they have houses landlord, it's to pay off a mortgage. If their mortgage is going to be paid off in less than 6 years, they might just sell the house, put that off their mortgage. And, you know, it's, they said in particular that there is, in the first quarter of this year, that from the Real Estate Alliance agents in 10 counties, which includes Donegal, it's attributing to more than 40% of their sales to the change in rules. So that rate's doubled than that of 3 months ago. Whenever they had a look then at the price of an average 3-bed semi-detached house by county, Donegal sitting at 215,000. Now that's up 3.6%. And that's the third highest increase in Ireland. So we're only beaten by Cavan, who's up 5.6%, and Laois, that's up 5%. So it's, again, a stark time to, if you're looking to buy a house, if you're trying to rent a house, it's very difficult. I know many people sort of in around my age where they're not even trying to buy, they're just trying to find somewhere to rent that they can afford, and it is near impossible. So it is. Going to have a look now to the Irish Daily Star, and I referenced this story just at the start. So it the headline here is Young Mum Left for Dead in Horror Assault, and this is down in Tipperary, where a young mother was the victim of a savage beating on the roadside and was left fighting for her life last night. So it's Scarlett Faulkner, also in her 20s. She was found by the emergency services with catastrophic head injuries on the side of the road at Bird Hill, and that's in County Tipperary. Miss Faulkner was found a short distance from the towns of Ballina, Killaloe, in between Nenagh and Limerick. So Miss Faulkner herself is a member of the traveller community from a family in Limerick City, and is believed to be attacked by one or several people who were armed with weapons. And the frightening thing about this is she was left at the side of the road at 5:30 in the evening, so that was in broad daylight. As it stands at the moment, Gardaí's working on theories on how, the events led up to this. At the minute, they are thinking that Miss Faulkner might have been travelling in a car that was rammed by another vehicle and then dragged from the car and attacked with the implements. She was airlifted to hospital then. She's currently in University Hospital of Limerick. She's underwent scans, and there was a vigil held for her, and her relatives have taken to social media asking for everyone's thoughts and prayers to try and, I suppose, just keep Scarlett in their minds and send their well wishes towards her. Looking now to the Irish Daily Mail. So there's the MEP hopes to call a time on daylight saving. This was interesting. So it's MEP Sean Kelly, and he thinks now that once Ireland will take over the 6-month EU presidency, that they may be able to push the daylight savings out the window. In this, they're like, Ireland was never in favour of it, but the reason that we didn't go against it was that there was fears that if the UK didn't go with it, it could lead to there being an hour time difference between Lifford and Strabane, essentially, over the border. So they are saying, he's saying, sorry, that if the clocks hadn't gone back an hour last October, it could have saved Irish households large sums in their money and electricity bills, because the light and heating would have been switched on later in the day and used less energy, which is something I have to say I actually hadn't really considered in relation to that. Any time that I had thought of it, it was more so in relation to just convenience. So I'm going to have a little look here now to the Sun. and that is on the passing of Michael Lester, who many will know from the Sunday game. Michael passed away at the age of 71. People will know him from the game, with the likes of Pat Spillane, Joe Brawley and Colm O'Rourke. And he retired in 2018 due to ill health. His last job, I suppose, was the All-Ireland final between Dublin and Tyrone, which Dublin won. And after that, he announced his retirement and said that he had won the lottery, and that was because he survived a cardiac arrest and wanted time out from work. So he made that call in 2018 and sadly there passed away. So the right call for him because, you know, that was only less than 10 years ago. So that is the papers. We will take a little ad break here and we'll be joined by our first guest. The time is 16 minutes past nine. Now, I am joined by Rachel, a co-chair, a resident in Letterkenny. Rachel, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Donna Marie.
Now, Rachel, you have gotten in touch, and this is because of the current state of your road. I've saw photos of it there, and it's just crater after crater. I suppose just give us a listeners there a description of sort of what you're contending with there on a daily basis.
Well, the road itself is in a rural area, so as you'd imagine, it's already twisty, bendy, narrow, windy, and hilly. So that's fine, but the issue is that the surface of the road has disintegrated over many, many years. And when a crater or a pothole appears, generally it tends to take up nearly the whole width of the road, so there's no avoiding it. So, you know, all of the local people's cars are getting destroyed in driving on the road every day. But when the council actually does come out to patch up the potholes, It's not a permanent fix. It's basically just putting a sticking plaster over something that's a much bigger issue. So at the moment, the road surface is ripped up everywhere. There are massive potholes everywhere. And it takes multiple calls to the county council for them to send somebody out. And in general, they tend to send out a little pickup truck. Somebody shovels in a little bit of tarmac and it's not even leveled. So you can just imagine the bumpiness. Mm. And just last week when I contacted the council and together with a lot of the other neighbours of the area, they did send somebody out eventually after three phone calls to patch up a massive pothole that was taking up the entire width of the road. But they left another one 100 yards away from that. And I can't even describe to you, Donna Marie, how bad the state of the road is. And it's just like a patchwork quilt of lumps and bumps and dips and craters and holes. And I get that it's a rural area, you know, but at the same time, if that happened in a town, it wouldn't be tolerated quite as well, I don't think.
Rachel, you spoke there about damage to cars. What kind of damage have you seen? And I suppose the problem with cars is that they're bloody expensive to fix.
Well, this is it. And I'm fortunate enough to have a fairly new car, but the tyres are gone within 2 years and they're supposed to last a lot longer than that. Mm. And the suspension and the chassis is getting destroyed as well. And I know my neighbours are in the same boat. We actually have a very prominent, well-known local bus company just down the hill from where I live. And I have no idea how they manage. There are school buses, there are coaches, everything travelling on this very narrow, windy road. And I mean, the road has fallen away at the edges. It's just in a very, very poor state of repair. And my mind boggles sometimes at how it's allowed to get to that state and why it isn't resurfaced entirely, you know.
And it must be very frustrating, you know, to have to put up, I suppose, such an argument and a like team effort between you and all your neighbours. And then, you know, for it not to be fully done or to be partly done rather than getting all of the work done in one go and trying to, I suppose, nip the problem in the bud.
Well, this is it. Like, I appreciate the council is very busy and they have other things and bigger priorities. But as I say, because we're in a rural area, I think sometimes that gets overlooked. And I'm driving on that road multiple times every day and it's my only access route to get out of my house and into town. And I have two choices. I can go left or go right at the bottom of my driveway. But when I go left, that's the most direct route into town. And that's where the road is in a very, very poor state of repair.
And
I mean,
there's
agricultural machinery as well.
Is there any room to navigate the potholes? Like, are you able to get around them? And not that that should matter, but is that even possible for you?
No, not at all. No. As I say, the last pothole, we still have one major pothole on the road. There are numerous smaller ones. But the massive pothole we had last week that was filled in with a shovel of tar was extremely deep and took up about 3/4 of the width of the road. And the road itself is barely wide enough for a car. And there aren't enough passing places either. That's another issue. But you can't avoid it. So you have to drive extremely slowly and allow your car to go into the deep crater, at least on one tyre, on one set of tyres.
And Rachel, I'd say you're probably in sort of the best scenario at the moment in the case that it's longer daylight hours. You can see a bit better. There's not as much ice.
Well, this is it, because in the winter, you can just imagine if there's a sea of potholes on the road, we have another issue where there's surface water on the road all the time, because all around the road itself are areas of bogland. So the water is draining off the bog and this fills all the potholes. So in the winter, it's like a skating rink, because they're just covered with a film of water and ice. And we also are at the highest altitude in Letterkenny. Where we live is the highest point of Letterkenny, just outside the town. So we get all the frost, all the ice, and we get snow when nowhere else gets snow. So it's extremely dangerous. And I'm just at the end of my tether with it now at this stage, Donna Marie.
I'd say so. That sounds extremely frustrating. And you had mentioned agriculture machinery there. So I can't imagine trying to drive a narrow road, never mind a narrow road that's full of holes, and then meet like a tractor on the way as well.
This is it. And I mean, when I drive home from town, which happens multiple times on a normal day, I end up having to pull in. There are one or two passing places on our narrow road to where I live. But I have to pull in numerous times to let other vehicles pass. And the road is actually getting very busy. It's getting increasingly busier. But with the amount of coaches and tractors and minibuses and everything that's passing up and down the road, it really needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency.
Well, Rachel, thank you very much for coming on here to share experience. We'll get on to council as well, and hopefully we'll get maybe some kind of answer to see as why is that this road in particular is getting left behind. I'm sure there's many others as well. But Rachel, thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna Marie.
Thanks, Rachel. As I said there, I'm sure Rachel's lived experience is typical of many others across Donegal. I suppose it's one of the tribulations of living in a rural county. We tend to feel like Donegal as a county does get left to one side, and then within Donegal, the more rural you are, there's a lot of people from their lived experience, it's harder to get things that you need. We may be able to we can't fix the roads, but we can do something else. We are kicking off our Grand A Day giveaway today on the Greg Hughes Show. John Breslin will be in with me, and we're going to do the first of the draws. So get your tickets, get them early. I've been that soldier on the phones, and all the calls come at once, and we want to make sure that you have every chance to get your tickets got. So I'll get a little bit of confirmation on when those ticket sales are going to close. And whenever they do, we'll let you know. But ring now, get in early, don't put it off. Now, if you buy your ticket today, that is going to last you right up until Friday. So from now until Friday, we're giving away €1,000 every day. And in our final draw, we will have the chance to give you €10,000 in cash, as well as a €10,000 home makeover. And that is in conjunction there with Foy's. So make sure that you get your ticket in now, and don't leave yourself absolutely raging. We'll take another break here and we'll be back after that. Now, it's just coming up to 9:30. I got confirmation there for 10:30 or for 10:15 to get your final tickets in there for that draw. Now, I'm joined by Mary Coyle, the manager of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. Mary, we speak once again. are you?
We do. We're in close contact this weather.
We sure are now, but it is all for a very, very important cause. And that is the retention of the midday flight between Donegal and Dublin, a flight that's very dear to your organisation. What's the latest update? Where are we now at the moment?
Well, I suppose we received a letter from the Minister Dara O'Brien on Friday. Just what the letter was really was an update on the process. I suppose we expected more from the letter, and we expected a commitment and guarantee, and we expected a timeline when the midday service, which is due to come to an end at the end of this week, would commence again. Instead, we got an update on the process. It was a letter of intent rather than a letter of guarantee. Slightly disappointed, to say the least. I would say the only positive part of all of this is that the minister himself is giving a firm commitment to see this process through to the end. But to be honest, Donna, we expected more.
That's kind of what I had thought whenever I was having a look at you shared the letter there to your social media, and it was an awful lot of what we kind of already knew, just was to be more blunt about it.
Exactly. There was nothing new in the letter at all. And I think the letter was sent in haste because we were due to Dublin, as you well know, you were going with us. We were due to protest in Dublin tomorrow. I think it was really that they didn't want to see a number of buses arriving for a protest outside their lair. And so I think the letter was sent in haste. And but it did ask for another 2 weeks. Now, given that we're going into our eighth week now, or possibly a wee bit more, so this is when we met with the minister on the 24th of February. He was talking about 8 to 10 days, and then there was a further 2 weeks, and now they're asking for another further 2 weeks. And it really is. It's just pushing it out more and more.
And now you were rounding up the troops to travel down to Leinster House tomorrow. Important to note, that's not cancelled. It's postponed.
That's it. It's not cancelled. We are giving the 2 weeks grace to ensure that the process that the process just carries on, and that the engagement with the department carries on. And if we don't receive a letter or confirmation that this is all settled, we are due to go travel to Dublin again on the 14th of April. It's a little over 2 weeks, but the 2 weeks falls right in the middle of Easter. So the next time the Dáil is back after that is Monday 13th. So we intend to travel on April 14th if this is not resolved before then.
You've said there this has been going on now for over a month and a half in terms of the efforts that you have been making there in the Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. A lot of your campaigners are undergoing treatment themselves at the moment. How are they getting on? You know, it must be that extra worry and extra energy that needs to be exerted into this. You know what I mean?
It is. And I think what it is people are worried. Stress is not a good thing for cancer patients. And as we all know, cancer waits for nobody. It carries on. So what we're trying to do is instill confidence in the service so that people know when the service will be back. People will know that the aircraft will be housed back in Carrickfinn, and that the flight will go out at the same time every morning, and that they will make their appointments in Dublin. What we need is reassurance. If we get reassurance, we're able to reassure all our clients.
And Mary C, in terms of the aircraft in Carrickfinn at the minute, that it does be housed overnight, that is meant to remain in place now. Is it to the end of this week? Do we know what's kind of happening in between those times? Or
I think on the 29th, at the end of the week, that the schedule as it is now with the midday flight and the aircraft housed in Carrickfinn will stop until this is resolved. That is my understanding. That so that we're not really sure of the timeline for that, and that is why we're pushing so much for an end to this process, so as that there is confidence that and that the people are reassured that the flights are coming back as the schedule is now, and that the plane will be in Carrickfinn as it has been this past 20 years.
And I just, I know that whenever we've been talking about this, you know, we're talking a lot about PSOs, about contracts, about government ministers and this, that and the other. But whenever it's at the point now where we're not sure if the plane will stay there after next week, just remind us what's at the root of all this, you know, that this is people's lives and having to travel for their cancer treatment.
Well, that's it. We have over 500 patients at the moment that travel up and down to Dublin for either diagnosis or treatment. We also have children with life-limiting or long-term illnesses. And we also have people that are waiting for kidney transplants or going up and down for dialysis. So we have a lot of patients relying on the service. We have a lot of people that also use the lunchtime flight, and that is in particular if they go up in the morning and they get on really well, Donna, that means they'll be back in the airport and back down at lunchtime, and they don't have that long day sitting about Dublin waiting to come home again. When we travel to Dublin twice, first to meet the officials and then to meet Minister O'Brien, we had two patient voices with us. People that had gone through this journey, people that had been ill and up and down to Dublin for treatment, and they were able to give an account of what it's like when you come out of the hospital in Dublin after receiving treatment, how the only thing you want to do is go home, get into your bed, and you know, and obviously it takes its toll when you have to sit about Dublin. So what we're looking for as well is to reassure the people that are going up from the islands. They would just take the boat out in the morning and head to Dublin on the lunchtime flight and then do the return lunchtime the following day and back out to the island again. So this is a great worry for all of these people because we don't know how long this is going to take. Even if we get a timeline that the airline and the airline has agreed to return to the schedule as it is now, how long is that going to take? How many weeks are we looking at? Pat the Coke Gallagher had said we were looking at 2 months. I'm not really sure. We have no indication of timeline at all from the minister.
Then that's very worrying. Now the Cancer Flights and Services does liaise directly with the St James's, the different hospitals. Have you heard much from them? You know, like what's their take on this?
We have been in touch with them. We had one oncologist that has backed us 100% and said, you know, this is not going to work. He is somebody that uses that used to use flights himself, although not from Donegal, to get to Dublin, and he said, you know, it's quite worrying when there is not a full service there, a full schedule. You know, he would be concerned for the patient. So I think at the moment, some of our patients have missed their appointments. It is what we want is a consistent schedule like we had. We're not asking for more or less. This is something we already had. And I think it was a huge mistake from the beginning that this contract was signed.
I want to read you a comment here that came in. It says, the people protesting the loss of the afternoon flight to Donegal Airport are being led in a merry dance. The government will keep postponing to do anything. There's no point in giving the government an inch, they'll take a mile, and that the citizens are being treated like the enemy by the government. They're very strong words, and it's am I taking that as like, you know, if you're a citizen here in Ireland, you know, that's not a way that you should feel about your government.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, our government at the moment, there is a lot of criticism about our government at the moment. If it's not about the flights for Donegal, it is about the fuel costs, it's about the oil, it's about, and really, it's the people on the ground. It is the people like you and I that really are the ones that are being hit the worst, because we're losing the services that we depend on. It is always the working class people that seem to suffer the most. Even though the protest is off tomorrow, I'm just thinking of the message there that you received. Mm. The protest is off for tomorrow. That does not mean that we stop campaigning. Yeah. That does not mean that we don't intend to go to Dublin on the 14th. They have asked for 2 weeks, a further 2 weeks to fix this. If they have not fixed it, we will be back onto you, Donna Marie, and onto the radio station here, Radio na Gaeltachta, and we will be mobilising the people. We have a list. We've called them all this morning to say that it's just been postponed. We will be back to Dublin, and we will not be put off again by a letter that just gives us another update. The next letter has to be a guarantee, has to be commitment, and has to be the reinstating of the service as it was.
Mary Coyle, manager there of the Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. Mary, thank you very much for your time this morning. And as the story develops, sure, we'll keep in touch. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna. Bye-bye.
That was Mary Coyle there now from the Cancer Flights and Services. There is a few comments I just wanted to come to now in relation to fuel costs, and that's with them rising. And hopefully we'll get a bit of a reprieve on that now tomorrow. The fuel allowance finishes now on April 6th, which is €38 less for me. Every week, the cost of living's getting more expensive. I can't afford oil, petrol. I think we're in a recession at this very moment. And, you know, it is, we're getting to the time now where it's starting to feel very much like that we are entering a recession. And what that comes with it is an awful lot of stress and an awful lot of worry. So I hope that the government step up to what it is that they say that they're going to do tomorrow, because it's just, you know, like people, it sounds very get throwaway comment, but it's true. People really can't keep going on the way that they are. It sounds like a silly anecdote, but I don't think it is whenever you think about it in relation to this. And it was that I was doing my dishes the last day and my spatula broke. And whenever I got the spatulas, whenever I moved, which was during the summer there, and, you know, yourself moving is, there's so many wee things that you forget about. And I was in getting the stuff that I needed for the kitchen, and there was a nice lovely spatula there that was €15. And then I got the one that was €1.99 because, as I said, we're moving. Very big cost there. And it didn't last a bang. You know, the top came off it. And that is just the way that people who are going to be at the squeeze the tightest in this is going to be. You know, if you're not able to fill your tank, you're getting, I'm thinking of home heating oil, you'll be getting the 200 litres or whatever the minimum is. And if that keeps going up, you're going to keep paying the price for it. We'll take another break there. Let me know your thoughts on the roads there, as we were speaking to Rachel about the cancer flights and services, if you're caught in that. It's 086 60 25,000 for text or WhatsApp, or you can call Caroline or Shannon on 07491 25000. The weather today: dry but a little chilly and rather cloudy this morning. Some patchy light rain or drizzle will drift away over the late afternoon. Most areas will remain dry, and that's with highest temperatures of 8 to 11 degrees. Just on the live stream there, don't forget you can watch us on your smart TV or on social media. Well done to Mary Coyle there. And there is another lady saying that in the years gone by, we used to have to drive on the left side of the road. Today we drive on what's left of the road. That's in from Charlie there, which is a bit tongue-in-cheek, but also very much stands to truth. Now, I am joined on line one by Councillor Declan Meehan, an independent, in relation to Dairn Meteorology Services. Declan, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Donnery.
Now, we were talking before about dermatology, that there was a consultant position there and that it was overturned for Letterkenny University, that it was cancelled or blocked for Letterkenny University Hospital, but that's no longer the case.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago it came to light that though approval was given and funding was also approved for a consultant dermatologist at Letterkenny University Hospital, that was blocked basically by the National Clinical Lead for Dermatology. And so since that kind of came to light, I had been raising this with both the HSE and the Minister for Health, amongst other people as well, working on it. And we got news last week and confirmation on Friday that the decision of the National Clinical Lead had basically been overturned. And look, this is good news for Letterkenny University Hospital. This was always about fairness. It was about equity. It was about access to healthcare locally for Donegal patients. And particularly one of the things, I suppose, apart from the fact that people would have had to travel up to 2.5 hours each way to access dermatology appointments, the reasoning that was initially given by the National Clinical Lead in Dermatology to not allow the post be based in Letterkenny was that it would be a standalone consultant delivering that service, despite the fact that everyone who has to travel to Sligo is going to a standalone consultant based at Sligo University Hospital. So there was a lot of kind of, I suppose, anger around that, given the kind of hypocrisy and the lack of logic in that decision. So it's very good news that this decision has been overturned and that recruitment is now to commence for a consultant dermatologist to be based in Letterkenny.
And the reason that it was overturned, was it the pressure that was being applied? You know, it's kind of a sort of similar sort of theme just to the last conversation we had there about the cancer flights and services.
Well, look, I mean, this is the reality that we exist in Donegal. You know, we have to fight for absolutely everything. And it is undoubtedly the case that this decision was overturned because of the pressure that was being applied by public representatives, but also by hospital management and HSE management, who were working hard behind the scenes as well to ensure that this would not be the case, that Letterkenny would not be left without a consultant dermatologist. So it is also another example of how, when we're all working together for the same outcomes, and that we can really achieve for the patients based in Donegal. And look, another example of that is obviously when you had Mary Coyle on previously talking about the flights, the cancer flights, and that lunchtime flight from Dublin to Donegal. You know, the importance of everyone working together, regardless of political parties or none, and also involving both healthcare professionals and, crucially, community activists as well.
And, you know, that does, it boils down to what the community do push for. Not necessarily something that people may think is very democratic or fair. You know, as you said there, we've seen it, we're seeing it whether with dermatology and with the cancer flights, and no doubt as well other services. I'm thinking about urology. A lot of men with prostate cancer left having to either go to Galway or if they're lucky, they get to go to Derry.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they're all issues that I have been pushing forward, kind of highlight awareness on it. And the amount of patients that contact me, any given week or in a month or any time you're raising these issues, and they're telling you stories about, you know, the conditions that they're living with, which are exacerbated by the fact that they have to travel for long amounts of time in order to access the healthcare that they need. And this is something that we all need to work together to keep pushing forward to ensure that there is reinstatement and expansion of basic services at Letterkenny University Hospital to improve patients' outcomes and to improve the lifestyles and quality of life of those patients as well.
Coming back to the dermatology, do we know whenever that post then will be filled and when people will be able to start going to Letterkenny rather than to Sligo?
Well, no definite timelines on that yet. Hopefully the recruitment will be successful. What we have seen over the past number of months is that recruitment is becoming much better in Letterkenny, much easier. It still has its challenges, but I think that there's momentum around Letterkenny University Hospital, which is very, very, very positive. And I think that as a result of that, there's a lot going for it in terms of people wanting to work there. So we hope that this will be a speedy recruitment process, and hopefully patients will be able to be seen in Donegal, in Letterkenny, within the next few months, hopefully.
And what's important to note as well is that, it is great that this has been overturned. We hope that the consultant will be put in place. But there needs to be proper resources assigned to this. More often than not, there's a great announcement. This is happening. We have somebody here. But then whenever it comes down to it, the person doesn't have the tools or the time or the funding that they need to do the job that they were brought in to do.
Absolutely. Look, this is, a really, really good outcome that has come from this, I suppose, kind of mini campaign, if you like, that a dermatologist will be appointed to Letterkenny University Hospital. But, we have to look at LUH in the round. We have to look at it as a whole campus, as a whole service for people. And when you talk even about dermatology, ideally what we want to see is trainee doctors coming as well as consultants and working in this area. And it's not just in dermatology, but it is an issue that's identified at Letterkenny University Hospital. Non-consultant hospital doctors, trainee doctors, we need to have more of them placed here in Letterkenny University Hospital, which will allow a more efficient service under whatever specialty that is.
Councillor Declan Meehan, thank you very much for that. That is an independent Councillor Declan Meehan there. He's also a member of the Western Health Board. So it's a committee that they meet up every so often, I think. Is it once a quarter, once a month? And it's a forum where they get to push these issues out. And we monitored down the newsroom and these were issues that the Councillor Meehan would have raised. I want to take some of your comments here, Bruce, before we go to the news at 10 o'clock. We have one in here from our YouTube stream, and it says, if the government would prioritise its own people and not give millions away to support immigrants and the bottomless war in Ukraine. And I know that it's whenever your household is struggling, it's very difficult to be angry at people who are coming in and seeking refugee status, and it seems that they are being handed everything. But just remember, if you are feeling very angry towards them, how do I word this right? It's powers that be that are, attributing to this. So, just be aware of that. Whenever you are lobbying and speaking to your local politicians, it's to focus on, to ensure that what's being done for you can be done. I have a comment in here in relation to the tenancies and landlords. This person says, I own 5 houses. I had 4 houses rented out. I have children and planned to give the houses to them. I had to sell 2 of the houses as you're under different tenancy rules as a small landlord. I had 2 long-standing tenants who were very good, and they only paid €650 in rent. You wouldn't get a house in Letterkenny for that now. I'll have to sell my other houses too, because I can't risk having a bad tenant in for 6 years. The new legislation that the government's brought in will not be the all and end all. And I can hear what that person's saying. I was having a conversation with my friends there about rent, and we're kind of scattered all over the joint. So we are. There's a few of us here in Donegal. There's some down in Dublin. And the rent that we're paying here isn't incredibly different from what's being paid in Dublin. And the difference is, though, is that, you know, the house that I'm in with my partner, whereas my friend is sharing, she's basically paying for the room and for use of the kitchen. But it is, like, the prices are going up, and, you know, the landlords that are there that want to keep their rent down and keep their tenants in, a lot of them are feeling that they don't have a choice and they have to sell. Back to fuel here. It's ironic how hard they fought to the apple tax, paying their proper tax, and now they fight to keep the VTR and illegal import tax. It must follow EU direction on excise duty. This is in relation to the conversation I think that was had on the Friday panel. This one, Greg, carbon tax, look at the size of Ireland and the map. We're trying to save the planet. And that as well can be very disheartening, you know, whenever you feel like you're trying to make all these efforts to do your bit for the planet, and you know, you do think, you're like, is what I'm doing even making a difference? But it does, and you know, try just to keep the good fight going. Would you please, oh, this is for the panel as well, but why our fuel prices have increased 8 times more than any other EU country? And you know, you can see it as well across the border, you know, their fuel prices are going up. One would argue they're not going up quite as drastically as they are here. This person says they saw diesel at €2.04 yesterday, and it was €1.99 at the same fuel provider in another town 5 minutes up the road. But tell me again that there's no price gouging going on. And another one saying that people who are unemployed are getting no help at all and can't afford retrofitting. It's not the fault of their own. They just need to keep working, families that need help. And one more we'll take here, that the oil is going through the roof and everything else is as well. The longer it goes on, the worse it will get. We could see other countries could join in. So that's sort of where we are at the moment with the oil costs. We're going to go to an ad break here very shortly. But just before that, do not forget that it is half an hour left now to get your tickets in. That is for the draw to be entered in today to get your €1,000. And it will be €1,000 every day until Friday. Plus on Friday, we'll have the €10,000 home makeover as well as the €10,000 in cash. So do not leave yourself short. Get in. It's half an hour now. I can see the tombolas out there and the tickets are being put in. So if you want, you can go on to our website to get your tickets there. It is 1 for 15 or 5 for 50, I believe. And if online's not your thing, don't worry. You can give us a call on 074-91-25000. We have a team here who are ready to take your calls. What you'll need for that is your details, your card details, and they will be able to tell you over the phone what your ticket numbers are. So that's 074-91-25000. Make sure that you get in on time. The draw, again, just wanted to shout it because there is about 22 minutes left to get your tickets in. The phones are flat out there, so make sure that you ring in now so that you're not disappointed. I just have a wee request here I want to play that says good morning. It's Catherine Peoples here, Davin's granny, and I just want to say a huge thank you to Aisling, to Greg and to the family for all the incredible work and raising the fantastic amount of money, which will go a long way to helping Davin and his family. So for those who don't know, Greg's partner Aisling did a day long. She offered blow dries. There was a raffle. They streamed it all out. If you want to have a look back at it, you'll be able to see it on Greg's Facebook page. So this is, and it was all in aid of little Davin, who is over in England at the moment receiving treatment for his heart issue, so he does, and he had to be transferred over. They say thank you all for a wonderful day yesterday at Aisling's Hair Salon in Downing's, and that's all from the People's family, which is lovely to hear. So it is. Now, next, we're actually going to go to a pre-record interview. Now, it was myself and Niall Speak that was talking, and he's the owner of EcoBasket. Essentially, the EcoBasket had organised a market back in Christmas, which was very successful. They planned another one in Strabane for Easter time, and it was an Easter market, and there was around 25 small businesses, but that had to be cancelled because of the cost of doing business, but also for fuel prices. But I'll go here now to the pre-recorded piece with Niall, and you'll be able to hear all about it. Joined with me now is Niall Speak, the owner of EcoBasket. And Niall, you ran a successful market around Christmas time, and there was plans to do that again this Easter, but that ultimately had to be abandoned. I suppose just what was the circumstances leading to this?
Well, I suppose you highlighted there, the one at Christmas, you know, was fantastic, and there was massive demand, you know, from the traders essentially to run one at Easter. But, you know, I suppose when, you know, a lot of planning and thought had went into it, and, you know, I suppose even recently we went to price not just the insurance again. The insurance had obviously significantly quite hired, but also this week we were notified as well, as these events obviously take double the wastage, you know, in terms of what we have to do. The bin company that currently services our commercial premises are raising the price by 4.2% alone. Of course, obviously, there was significant factors as well with the rising fuel costs that unfortunately some traders couldn't attend, as, you know, as the difficulty, obviously, and the panic sets in, you know, that they might not be able to afford to attend as well.
And I suppose just to set the scene for this, it was due to happen around April 4th and 5th, and there was 25 mm-hmm. small businesses to be taking part in this.
Aye, very similar to what Christmas was. I mean, Christmas, while we didn't get the weather, we had the marquee, which, and, you know, even for ourselves, you know, we set a fee, you know, and basically that fee, we don't make anything from that fee. That fee just goes to cover the insurance and goes to cover the cost of, you know, the marquee and wastage and stuff like that. And obviously we generate, you know, revenue in terms of people that come by and then come into the shop as well, because the yard is attached to the shop. So yeah, look, I mean, that was the plan, and unfortunately, while it is disappointing, you know, it obviously we just have to rejig and see if we can do something then at a later date, and hopefully something will come up when things are maybe a bit better.
And that pitch, the fee was £30. So the fee itself wasn't, you know, it's not something that's going to necessarily maybe break the bank. That might be a wrong sort of term to use the way things are at the minute. But you talked there about the fuel prices. And so for you would have had vendors coming from Donegal. What was their total output before they would have set foot coming into which led to them pulling out?
Well, essentially, like, give or take, you know, somebody coming from even the likes of Bundoran, you know, which, give or take, it's an Irish Durban. I mean, even at the minute, like, you know, you look at some of the fuel costs in Donegal, I've seen actually myself some of them at €2.30 in some stations, and it's kind of varied, you know, amongst all the stations. You know, if you take Donegal as an example, I mean, €20 not going to get you fired, you know, even from, I might be saying it wrong, but from Bundoran, even Mr. Bannon, I'd even think a €20 would get you there at the minute. So if you take that outgoing cost, you know, give or take, like if you're following a van, like you could be 2 hours set up and 2 hours takedown, the cost of filling, you know, the vehicle, and then obviously the cost of your pitch fee, you know, you could be out in excess of maybe €60-70 by the time you take your time. And, you know, these are market traders, you know, like €60 or €70 could be some of them what they're making a day.
And, you know, I would have a very, very marginal amount of experience in markets, the kind of, you know, like the sort of craft fair myself, and that's it. Like, it's lovely being there, and, you know, it's so nice seeing all the stuff, but there is a bit of an air of people really do come sort of for that experience, and there can be times where vendors end up sort of losing out on it.
Yeah, and look, I'm coming from experience myself. Before we had the shop, we were nearly 2 years at a market stall as well, and you had your good weeks and you had your bad weeks, and, you know, but to be honest with you, like, it was the community around you know, the market traders, you know, and I'm you know, and that's basically what it's built on, you know, being at the market and that atmosphere. And we wouldn't even have a customer base if it wasn't for a market. We wouldn't even be anywhere near that, and that's how we built up our base, was a market.
And as you said, like that, if that's how you built up your base, it's a worrying time now for traders going forward.
I think it's a worrying time for everybody going forward. I mean, if you take, you know, market traders, certainly. I mean, because a lot of people might do this as a part-time as well. You know, and sadly, the markets are dwindling because, you know, you look at the cost of insurance and things, and then, you know, the venues as well, you know, obviously lighting, heating, if there is certain venues, like our cost as well, you know, marquee cost. I mean, a marquee cost alone for us to set up for even 25 vendors is around £950. You know, so them costs, and then you look at, obviously, our own costs as a business to run this. I mean, we have to put extra resources. we know even recently, you know, the local council voted on a 4.8% increase, which was one of the highest in the north of Ireland. So we have them costs as well. They contribute, you know, lighting and heating as well, which, you know, goes, it's just astronomical at the minute. Look.
How has cancelling this event left your business? Are you losing out now as a result, or have you lost out already?
I mean, obviously people are disappointed. Like, it would have, I mean, if what we've seen at Christmas there over the 2 days, we actually ran it over two nights in Christmas, we've seen hundreds of people to the point that, you know, what that kind of impacted us, it actually gave us enough financial income to basically get through January, which was great, you know, and it's initiatives like this that we do, not just obviously to help our own business in terms of revenue, but also as a community aspect, and really drive people from not just the town but outside the town into Strabane, because we want people in the town. You know, we want people not just to come to us but to go and see other things as well, and to help so that everybody can get a turn.
And it's events like this here that really boost that idea of shopping local as well. And I suppose as we kind of come into, you know, times are sort of getting tough for everyone, as you were saying there, it seems to be that local businesses are the first to suffer because people will just gravitate to going online.
It is, look, it's the way the world is going, and, you know, when, but sadly, you know, as I said, you know, the shop local, it is something that, you know, people have gone, I suppose, more convenience, more than actually shopping local. There is, you know, a lot of people are starting to switch on as well, that local is better too, but there still is, you know, it's very hard to compete with big market chains, simply, like, I mean. But what I would say is you won't get the quality of what local traders, but also local market traders can offer as well. But, and it's not just that, it's the social aspect. You know, these really are social places as well where people can meet and have a chat and have a laugh. And, you know, sometimes, like, it's a bit daunting going into, like, big commercial market, big commercial places or something like that. And it's just, you're just there for convenience more than anything.
And now you mentioned there that you're looking at something for the summertime. Is there anything really set in the works yet, or what's that looking like?
Probably a bit more prolonged, you know, something like a 4 week thing rather than just, you know, a 2 day thing. We still want to obviously focus heavily on community, and one of the feelings obviously from myself, and, you know, is trying to give back to the community and looking at like a free family event or something like that that we can do, you know, to kind of celebrate where we're from and kind of, you know, you drive, I suppose, external business into the town as well, like, as much as we can.
And I suppose finally now, just to wrap it up, is there any sort of message that you would give to people listening who might be maybe leaning towards that more online shopping rather than going local?
Look, I mean, you know, online is, look, obviously as everybody uses it, but, you know, how many packages are returned online? To me, like, look, we all use online. There's certain things, you know, we're booking flights and things like that and different bits and pieces. But for me, like, I like going into a place and seeing a thing and being able to touch it and being able to interact with somebody and have that level of service. Because what we see online now is trying to get somebody on the phone, you're generally going to talk to a robot. I mean, nothing beats going in and actually that old school way of talking to somebody and getting first-hand customer service.
The rise in fuel costs and the insurance and the likes of that, those things that you had spoken about, is there any, if there had to be one to try and come down, like, what would your appeal be to the likes of government or the people that have control over this?
I think fuel at the minute, I mean, what we're seeing in the public obviously is some fuel stations even run out because there's massive panic, and with anything like panic and with demand obviously creates inflation. And, you know, obviously if there was a carbon tax cut, I'm sure that would help a lot of people, not just for the fuel cost, but obviously every business and every home has to be able to heat themselves as well. And, you know, that is a big factor that people are choosing to, you know, understandably, you know, heat their homes before they're going out and spend the money. So it does have a big impact on revenue for stores as well.
Niall Speak, owner of the Eco Basket, thank you very much for joining us. Hi, it's just after 20 past 10 here on The Greg Hughes Show. Joined now by Alderman Neary McMorris, the Deputy Mayor of Derry City and Strabane District Council. I wish it was on different terms that we were speaking. It's in relation to the tragic passing of Amy Doherty. Hello.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me there okay?
I can, yeah.
Perfect. Now, Alderman, it's a very much a sad story that we're talking about here today.
100%. It's just a tragedy. You know, a young mother has lost her life in really, really difficult circumstances. Yeah, there's a police investigation, and I know somebody has been arrested, a 30-year-old male. But this is a real tragedy for the community. We have a big emphasis in our council and district that ending violence against women and girls. And just for this here to be happening on our doorsteps is just unbelievable. And my sympathies and prayers and thoughts goes out to Amy's family, especially her two young children.
And, you know, that's a lot of the discourse that we're seeing on social media, that people are thinking about the fact that there is now two children who went to bed on Saturday night without a mammy anymore.
100%. You know, because they've also lost their father too. You know, if this pans out that he was responsible. But, yeah, you can only feel for the two children, you know. It's traumatizing, and the poor family, we can only imagine what they're going through. And this is just a senseless death. And yeah, it's really, really tragic. And you can't comprehend, you know, what's going through the minds of people that actually can do this to another human being.
Yes, and now we don't know the particulars of the case yet, and it's all to go before a court. But it's this. Is a symptom of a larger problem, which seems to be across Northern Ireland. And we know that in the last 5 years, the number of women that have been violently killed is stark. It's the highest in Europe.
Yeah, well, you know, we have stark stats here for violence against women and girls. And, you know, there's been 20 deaths in the last 10 years. So, like, I mean, it's startling that we're still seeing to this day, even with all of the promotional things that's gone out there in order to end this scourge, we're still seeing deaths. And do you know what's worse about it is the fact that, you know, somebody's home should be their safe haven. Mm-hmm. They should be safe when they close their doors. You know, and this young girl, you know, was brutally murdered in her own home, which is absolutely disgusting, you know. And we find that time and time again when women are subjected to violence or even murder, then, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's somebody they know and probably love. And, yeah, it's just startling that, you know, that somebody can do that to another human being, and especially like a young mother who had her whole life in front of her, and two wee young children who are going to grow up now without a mammy. It just doesn't even bear thinking.
And that is the really sad case about it. You know, there's a lot of narrative about, you know, don't go out at night on your own, don't do this, that or the other, but a lot of the times whenever we hear these stories, it's somebody that was known to the victim that's been causing the pain. In yeah. relation to I suppose, domestic and sexual violence, there's been a lot of efforts made in the north and across Derry and City Strabane district in particular. But Mayor there, Rory McHugh, had highlighted that yesterday whenever he was extending his condolences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that has been largely talked about. We had two sexual attacks in parks, you know, that wasn't let up and whatever. So there has been a big effort, you know, meaning to address the problems. And now we have found funding in order to put the lights under them parks. But again, I have to reiterate that most of these attacks is happening in the family home. And I just want to appeal to anybody who is living in a toxic relationship where there is potential of violence or there is violence, you know, there's help out there. You know, you don't need to suffer in silence behind your own front door. You know, we need to speak up. We need to speak out and, you know, and bring these perpetrators to justice. and we need to be doing every single thing that we can, and no stone should be left unturned in order to address this blight that we have in our community.
And is there a section perhaps on the council website for local services for specifically for Derry and Strabane that the people maybe listening to this might be able to find details?
Yeah, there is, and we also have, like, through the city, lighthouse stickers, you know, and if you put your phone to any of the lighthouse stickers, you know, that'll give you up every single charity organisation or any organisation where women or anyone can help get help and reach out to. So there is plenty of information out there. We just need to make sure that people are aware of it and that they use it. You know, we don't need to be sitting behind closed doors and suffering in silence. Speak up, speak out, do you know what I mean? And I can assure you there's help out there, and they're more than willing to help in any circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we should be doing every single thing that we can in order to eradicate this, you know. So I'm definitely appealing to anybody that's in a toxic relationship, get out. Do you know what I mean? Because you just don't know whenever the tide will turn and something very serious could happen within your own home.
And that, unfortunately, it's an awful lot easier said than done.
Yeah, I know. But we need to be encouraging women to get the support that they need. Do you know what I mean? There is professional support out there. We have Foyle Women's Aid in our city, and I know there's other charities who will help these women as much as they can, do you know what I mean? But the first step has to stand with a woman where she needs to seek that help, you know, or just tell a friend or tell someone, and hopefully they'll get the help that they need.
Alderman Neary McMorris, Deputy Mayor there of Derry City and Strabane District Council, thank you for your time this morning.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Now, that of course was all in relation to the tragic death of Amy Doherty, who was found very injured at her home and then unfortunately passed away from those injuries later in hospital. Just if you are listening and you need help, there is a 24-hour domestic and sexual violence helpline in Northern Ireland. That number is 0808 802 1414. So that's 0808 802 1414, and the number in the Republic of Ireland is 1800 341 900. So 1800 341 900. I've seen on social media an awful lot of businesses, particularly hair salons, places typically that are for women, all saying that whenever you are in the chair getting your hair done, or, you know, you're in for something and a private appointment, that they're opening up those spaces. So just find the courage to speak up and tell someone. And I know that is so much easier to say than to do. And as well, from everyone here, we're giving our condolences to the family of Amy Doherty, her two children, Rhea and Roman, and all those people. Now, that if you're listening to this and you're affected, please just try your best to speak up. We'll take a wee ad break here now. Now, it is after 10:30, and that means that the lines are closed to enter today's draw. And that is for the €1,000 that we will be drawing out here, myself and John Breslin, just before the show ends today. But once you get your ticket for today's draw, you'll be in for the rest, and the lines will open again to get more tickets once we have that draw done. It's just to make sure that nobody... you're not buying a ticket thinking that you're getting in for this here one, just to keep everything all above board and all polished. Now, this morning I had a chat with Minister Dara Cleary. He's the Minister for Social Protection, Rural and Community Development, as well as the Gaeltacht. He is on his way to Donegal this morning. He will be in Lahey, and he'll also be in Castlefin. So I wanted to catch up with him about what he's doing here in the county. He also made a big funding announcement, and we cover a few other things as well. Minister Dara Cleary, you're the Minister for Social Protection, Rural and Community Development, and for the Gaeltacht. Now, you are coming to Donegal today, but just before we get to that, you've made a funding announcement, and that's in relation to Irish language and Ulster Scots culture. So can you just, I suppose, run us through the 6.2 million and what that's going to look like for both communities?
Yes, Donna Marie, I'm delighted to be visiting Donegal today. I have a couple of different engagements, which we'll speak about later, but also delighted to announce €6.2 million from the Shared Island Fund in Rinn an Taoiseach, in the Taoiseach's department. It's an initiative really, really championed by the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. We'll be investing €6.2 million, €4.8 million in the Chisteann Vestlicha Gaeilge over the next 4 years, which supports Gaeilge projects in Northern Ireland and has a very, very strong track record, also funded by the British government and the Northern Ireland Executive. Since 2010, it's made capital investments in Gaeilge projects across Northern Ireland in cultural centres, community centres, I think very, very important work underway. And also delighted to announce €1.4 million for the Northwest Cultural Partnership in Derry. Northwest Cultural Partnership is made up of six independent organisations, and this is for the Culture Embrace project. And it very much focuses on the rollout of Ulster Scots, the Ulster Scots culture. And it also does work with the Inishowen Partnership, the Inishowen Development Company. So it has a very much a cross-border role as well. So I think they're very good, solid investments. We secured in this year's budget the biggest increase for Rinn na Gaeltachta in many, many years, a 30% increase. And I'm determined, Donna Marie, that money will make a difference in every Gaeltachta, but most importantly to the Irish and Amish-speaking community in all parts of our island.
And as you said, their funding like this is really important for the likes of Donegal, where you have just the cross-border communities there, and having that cross-border interaction is really important for, I suppose, culture, but also economically as well.
Absolutely. I think culture is very linked to the economy, and a shared culture, Donna Marie, is extremely important. So that's why I'm really interested in the investing in Ulster Scots. I think it's very important, as well as in Gaeltacht, their shared languages. And the more we can share them, the better the benefits will be, the more people are familiar with them. And we've seen already, and I'm sure your listeners are hearing an awful lot more Irish language advertising on Highland and on other stations and other media outlets. That is also leading to increases in employment in Gaeltacht areas, in Gaeltacht production. So you see very much investing in culture, investing in our language is also an economic investment, gives job opportunities. And for me, Donna Marie, one of the things is it allows those job opportunities to be created in our Gaeltachts, be that in the Donegal Gaeltachts or any other Gaeltachts, to keep people of creativity and talent in the Gaeltachts.
And, you know, we hear from the Gaeltacht community, and that's something that they worry about, is there's particularly a housing issue there at the moment, that where, I suppose, native Gaeltacht speakers who've grown up are ending up having to go elsewhere.
Yes, and that's one of the biggest challenges we have in Gaeltacht at the moment. And I'll be visiting the Donegal Gaeltacht before the start of the summer, but it's certainly a major challenge for us. And we're working on that. I'm working very closely with Minister James Brown on it, Minister for Housing. We're also, I've had several meetings with the chief executives and with the various officers of all the county councils in the Gaeltacht areas. And I know the executive in Donegal, but also the councillors across Donegal, the councillors are very focused on this. So we need to have families in the Gaeltacht who are raising their families, who are living their daily lives through Gaeilge, through Irish. And, I'm very focused on that. And as I said, I hope to be, we're making with some really good initiatives with Udaros for Gaeltacht as well. And you'll be working closely with Udaros in relation to that. And I certainly will be. Donegal has the honour of hosting the National Football Championships for Gaeltacht this year, and I will be up for that during the summer. We'll be visiting the Gaeltacht.
And that's good. Then you'll be back quite soon. But you are here today. So what's on the agenda?
Well, it'll be a very exciting day today. We're in Lahey. I'm joining my colleague, Councillor Micheál Nocton, for the opening of the Lahey Playground. That's a €250,000 investment from my department under the Town and Village Renewal Scheme, and an additional €50,000 under Clore for the sensory garden piece of it. And I just wanted to say congrats to the Lahey Development Committee, the Hall Committee and the Playground Committee, who've developed a beautiful facility there. I think it's a really good investment of our department's money, of investment by Donegal County Council, but most importantly, Donna Marie, a fantastic community who developed. I've only seen pictures, but they look amazing, and it's going to be a facility that have a very, very good track record. And now the transformation is going to add to that. And then we're going on to Castlefin to look at the playground there, developed under CRF, 112,000. And my colleague, Councillor Patrick McGowan, has asked me to go in there alongside my colleague, Deputy Pat Cope-Gallagher, and Minister Charlie McConnellogue, and Senator Niall Blaney. So we're covering those two projects today. Very, very substantial investment from my department. And I'll also be engaging with Donegal County Council on further investments as well, Donna, across the county.
And that is important. You know, people welcome seeing the likes of opening of play parks and funding coming in, but it needs to be sustained. A lot of people in rural communities, and you know, sometimes the figure speaks for itself, they feel quite overlooked, things tend to go to more urban towns and cities.
Well, look, the CLAR programme, we've reopened it for 2026, and that is very much focused on rural areas. And I was delighted to be able to agree and sanction the additional areas in Donegal into CLAR. But I also announced just prior to Christmas 900,000 for Donegal in town and village renewal projects that will roll out from 2026 on. I've had substantial engagement, Donna Marie, since my appointment. We have quite a number of projects outstanding in Donegal. We've made investments under RRDF, under Town and Village Renewal, and under CLAR. Those projects are being worked on at the moment. I want to see them done quicker. I'm not known for patience. And we are having very, very good interactions with Donegal County Council around getting those projects done quicker, and that those interactions will further continue. Because there's no point in me making announcements. I'm not into making announcements. I want to see things done. I want to see projects delivered. And for the communities and all of the projects, Donna Marie, from our department are funded from the department, but the initiative and the energy for them comes from within the community. And in fairness to those communities and to their councillors, I want to see things done quicker for the communities so that they can see their work on the ground and see their work rewarded.
I suppose then just on your speak there of not having much patience, what is your take on the popover payments? There's 90 million there owed to the state, and that is from a few years ago now at this stage.
Yeah, it is, but it also has to be put in the context, Donna Marie, that the pop payments were 9.1 billion euro. 9.1 billion euro was paid out between 2020 and 2022. And so what we're doing now is that we've identified overpayments of that, 139 million, 84 million is either being repaid or we have payment plans in place. And we're very much going after the balance. And, you know, there's engagement. I have a team in the department working very hard on that. Our department takes taxpayers' money very, very seriously. And they're chasing that down. They're engaging with every single person who owes money and who an overpayment has been identified with. And, you know, we're looking at putting plans in place, getting payments, putting attachments onto people's income. So each individual case, so Donna Marie, is different. Each individual case, you know, you have to look at what the payment plan is, how valuable it is, does it put a person under hardship. But I'm determined that we will collect the money that is owed to the state on behalf of the taxpayers who give us that money.
Then would you agree with Sinn Féin Deputy David Cullinan, who says that it does need to be looked at case by case?
It is being looked at case by case. You know, it's very much being looked at case by case because, you know, Donna Marie's situation will be very different from Dara's situation. And that is the case in all of our issues. But it's also important, Donna Marie, that we have control. And it's important that there is an understanding that there is consequences to people who wrongly or falsely claim. But the department is, you know, it's such an honour to be Minister of Social Protection, to be working with between seven and 7,500 exceptional public servants in every part of the country, and including in Donegal, who work very, very hard and work very much in the interests of those that they serve. And that's something, an ethos that's very important in the department. Every person is looked at as an individual. Every case is looked at differently.
And finally, Minister, the announcement that everybody is waiting to hear tomorrow about reliefs for fuel, just you were speaking there about how you don't want anyone to end up in hardship. Have we any sort of speculation of what that may look like? Is there anything you can share with us?
No, not at this point, Donna Marie. We are finalising the package today. it will go in front of the coalition party leaders, Taoiseach the Taoiseach, the Minister Kenny, this evening and go to Cabinet tomorrow. We'll be announcing it tomorrow. It will take effect very, very quickly, I can assure people of that, and it will be substantial. But also, Donna, we have to be realistic. You know, this is some of the biggest uncertainty in energy and in energy prices for nearly 50 years. And that uncertainty makes pricing very difficult. It makes it very hard to anticipate where prices are going to go in the coming days, never mind in the coming weeks. So, but we will act. We've had very good engagement with hauliers, and I thank them for that. We're very conscious of the day-to-day impact on fuel prices for people using cars and, you know, family cars as well, the price on heating oil. As Minister for Social Protection, you know, we will be doing, we have given proposals and tabled proposals in relation to fuel allowance, and we'll be engaging on that throughout today as well. So it'll be a busy day, but we will have a package to go to Cabinet tomorrow, and a package that will make a difference. But, you know, we're not going to be able to meet every demand. We can't meet every demand in the context of the uncertainty that we have in energy markets at the moment, the uncertainty that that's putting on prices and on costs generally. But we will continue. Tomorrow we will continue to keep a very sharp eye on things and to continue to engage in this area.
Minister Derek Leary, thank you very much. Now, the weather, cloudy and chilly this morning, as there'll be some drizzle over the afternoon, but it will be mostly dry with highest temperatures of 8 to 11 degrees. Now, you might have heard in our news cycle there that there's going to be a merger between the Swilly Mulroy Credit Union and Letterkenny Credit Union. And to tell us a bit more about it, I'm joined by Paul Hume, who's the chairperson of Letterkenny Credit Union. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Donna Marie. Good morning to the listeners as well. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Now, the merger between the two credit unions. I suppose people mightn't be too sure. What is a merger? What does it mean?
Okay, so basically, Donna Marie, this isn't the first time it's happened in Donegal. You know, we've had a number of mergers. We've had one in Inishowen between three credit unions, and we had a merger between Killybegs and Ballyshannon. It's happening all over the country. And it's basically what it says, Donna Marie, it's a transfer of engagements between both our credit unions. It's an exciting time. It's a historic time. It's brilliant for the members of both credit unions. It has benefits and enhancements for all members, Donna Marie. So basically, it's a coming together. The credit union is based on the spirit of partnership, of cooperation, and that's what we're doing. And the two credit unions are coming together to combine our forces for the betterment of our members, Donna Marie.
So where will operations be taking place from then for I suppose, four members that would be from both of them?
Yeah, for our members, Donna Marie, they'll see little or no difference. They'll come into their normal branch. They'll be greeted by their normal staff. So day-to-day, Donna Marie, our members will see very little difference. They'll still get the high-quality member-focused service at the counter that they've been getting. They'll see very little difference.
So just to be clear, because I know that sometimes people, they might be just a little bit unsure, that doesn't mean that any of the branches are going to close, or does it?
Well, there's one branch in Rathmullen that will close, Donna Marie. We as directors of both credit unions, we have a duty of care from a governance perspective to mind our members' money. Mm-hmm. And as part of the due diligence process, Donna Marie, we felt that the Rathmullen office wasn't viable. So we're going to close that in a minute. But we'll have four other branches across the area where our members can come and do the business, and they can also do it online as well or over the phone. And Donna Marie, so as I say, people will see very little difference. It's a great time, and we're really looking forward to our new venture together.
And just to outline there, you said it is very exciting that there will be benefits. Can you just sort of run us through those benefits?
Okay, well, if you look at it like there'll be larger loans for the Swilly Mulroy members, Donna Marie. Mm-hmm. There'll be higher savings limits for the Letterkenny members. For the Swilly Mulroy members will enjoy better life savings insurance and better death benefit. The Swilly Mulroy members will have access now to current accounts and also to mortgages. So it's an enhanced service for all members. There's winners all across the board, Donna. So it's a great time to be a member of both credit unions.
And just as you said there, it has been coming down the line. We've seen it in other parts of the county, and there's been talks about this happening here now for, I say, right in about, saying, maybe 2 years?
About a year, I'd say. You know, in 2025, the Swilly Mulroy and ourselves engaged in it. You know, we done it in the spirit of cooperation, Donna. It was the right, Donna Marie, it was the right thing to do. And we're delighted with the outcome. And to reassure our members, we've had a due diligence done independently. They've given us the go-ahead. The central banker bought into this. The Irish League of Credit Unions are bought into it. So it's the right thing to do, Donna. And it's just a great time for our members.
Well, Paul Hume, chairperson of Letterkenny Credit Union, thank you very much for that there, and best of luck now with the merger and everything to follow with
Thanks very much, Donna Marie, and maybe you'll come down and visit us sometime, sure.
Oh, sure will, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Donna Marie.
Bye-bye. That's Paul Hume, their chairperson of the Letterkenny Credit Union. So I suppose maybe on the outlook there, people might read that and be worried that it would mean that one of the credit unions would end up closing or that there'll be less services. But it seems to be that it'll be the opposite here that's happening now. Well, do you fancy giving your credit union a good lift? Because this is what we're doing. And we're pending at John Breslin in studio here now to get the draw done. And the man of the hour, here he is. The man, the myth, the legend. How are you? What wee mic? There you go. Mic one. John.
Yes.
I've always been outside doing these here. I'm so excited to be on the inside.
You have me at a disadvantage now. You're in full control over there. So
this is brilliant. You know what I'm going to do? Can you just boom that mic over a wee bit? We can't see your lovely face.
Okay,
there we go. There we go.
All right,
yes,
all right.
Perfect. So we're going to do the draw here now. This is for the first of the Grand Today giveaways.
Yes.
And so today it's €1,000. Tomorrow, is it your show that you're still be giving away 1,000?
I'm not sure what show it is tomorrow, but it'll be one of the primetime shows each day during the week, €1,000 a day. Will I go?
Yes,
over here
go do
now?
The honours. Okay. Go do the honours. So we have the big tumbler there. John is giving it a spin. Tune into it so you can watch this happening live if you very well wish. And I have the details here from Caroline, very kindly give it in. John, you are doing the draw tomorrow. Anya will be joining you in there on Wednesday. It is Jive time. Danny's doing the draw. Home stretch then will be the next one. And on Friday, it'll be Lee. And Gregor will be back in situ. You having a bit of bother there, John?
Yeah.
They're so locked in. We just don't want to give this money away. See, it takes someone. Anya's in here to the rescue here now. We will get this ticket drawn out. But you know what? If we run late, it's okay. It's John's show. So good night. We're getting a deep, deep reach in there now, John. So I think at the moment we're around the 4,000 mark. Okay, what do we got? What do we got here?
We have 1,466.
Do that again there. 1,466. You can see it there, John, just holding it up to camera there. So that's the ticket that we have drawn out here for the €1,000. We're going to see if we can get our lucky winner on the phone. John, this is also is in conjunction with a home makeover.
Yes.
If you know, we can't win it. So we can't, but
no,
if
we
you
can't.
Could, what would you do?
Ooh, you know what I'd do? I'd fix the couch because I just realised yesterday that the couch is broken. The arm in the couch is broken. How that happened, I have no idea because it's a fairly sturdy bit of furniture.
But do people sit in the arm of it? That's a real bugbear of mine.
They don't really. There's a kind of a wee table beside it, so they don't really. So I don't know whether I missed a party or maybe the...
You'd be having parties in your house that you know.
Maybe the dog was jumping on it or something. I don't know, but it's broken. So that'll be the one.
Yeah. That is a real... It really annoys. It's a real pet peeve of people sitting on the arm of the sofas. But I actually know, as I'm saying this to you now, I realise that my sofa in my new house doesn't have any arms, so it can't annoy me.
Oh,
so that's
right.
Great. So it doesn't. Well, it's L shaped.
So what happens when you lean over to one side?
You fall off.
All right. Okay.
Do you get the new sofa done? I thought you would have been doing something with the kitchen. You're very into your cooking.
We've just done something with our kitchen. We've just got an island in there. So that's that taken care of. So yeah, I would just get a few stools.
A few stools.
So fix the couch and get a few stools for the kids, the island.
Get
in the
seating crisis wrapped up with the Breslin's house.
I'd be eating into it. Yeah, yeah.
And then along with that, that's with Foy's. There's, so do you get the home makeover and the 10,000, or is it two separate prizes?
I know both. Yeah. So a home makeover to the tune of 10,000, and you get 10,000 euro in cash.
That's incredible. So it is.
So it's a good prize. Yeah, it and sure that's being given away next week.
Next week, so we're doing our grand today until
this week. Yeah, all this
and
week.
And then we have a prize worth 20,000 euro. Oh God, that would be fantastic. So I wonder if we had any luck there getting our winner. Oh, here comes Anya. Now, have we got? No, we do not have anybody on the phone. But I do want to say that if you're listening, the ticket is 1466. And it's Bridie Doherty who is the winner. And it was bought by Sarah Hegarty in Remelton. So it is. So if you're listening, Bridie, and you see you have some missed calls there from Highland, make sure you give us a wee bell. John's putting that ticket back in there now. And back into the tombola. So you are back in the mix, Bridie. So you are. So you could be, you could potentially win all of it and leave nothing for anybody. But so you have your 1,000, your one, congratulations. And then from there, you're back in now for the next 4,000 separate 1,000 euros to get. I said that very badly. And your 10,000 euro home makeover and your 10,000 euro in cash. John, thank you very much.
No problem, Donna.
I will wrap up here now so you can get to do your show on time.
Okay.
So that's all for today. We're going to go to an ad break now. We'll go up to the headlines. John Breslin's on next. Big thanks to Caroline Orr and to Shannon Wilkin for researching and producing the show. Bye-bye.